Give me warp in the factor of
5, 6, 7, 8.
Hello and welcome to Discussing Trek. I'm your host, Clarence. And today, what we're going to do is wrap up this season of Star Trek Lower Decks. And with me today to talk about this is none other than Kyle Jones. How you doing, man?
You know, as always, glad to be here. And you know what? Being on live streaming has made me realize I need to pay attention on what shirt I'm wearing to make sure I'm not wearing the same shirt 2 Mondays in a row.
I thought you were going to say the same shirt as me because I almost thought we had the same
shirt. That would have been cool.
Thanks to anyone who may be joining. Good to have you guys here. And, you know, we're just going to shoot the breeze and talk about what we thought about this season. So, Kyle, the strike is over.
The Lower Decks strike, the gold
was
strike.
Striking Lower Decks, man. The actors, the SAG after strike is finally over, man. I kind of did not expect this to be over so soon. Which it hasn't been soon. It's been going on for quite a while now. But it seemed like they were nowhere near coming to an agreement. So I really didn't expect to be over, you know, before the end of the year. But somehow we made it here.
You know, it's curious, interesting always, you know, to be on the side of the creators. I mean, we don't do the intellectual property as such as, of course, you know, an actor or writer or whatnot. But we do create our own things. So we do understand the creative mind is what I'm ultimately trying to say. That being said, I'm curious how the big streaming companies, you know, whoever they may be, are going to spend this however they want to. As are they going to, you know, raise prices and blame this? Are they, you know, I'm curious to see how it plays out, because I feel like there's going to be impacts, whether it be delays in viewing schedules, whether it's Star Trek, whether it's whatever the case, movies, whatever. I'm curious to see how all of that plays out.
And we're going to talk about the upcoming Star Trek shows in a little bit, but I know it's pretty much decimated the Marvel lineup that they talked about last year. You know, none of that stuff is going to be out on time. And they put some films around and they canceled some films. So, yeah, it's interesting to see how that all is kind of played out, because really when nobody's working, they're both losing. But I'm glad that they can come to some type of agreement here. And I'll pull up an article that we found on The Wrap, titled with being SAG after release, a summary of agreement, including details on AI protections. This was effective November 9th. The day the strike ended and it will run until June 30th, 2026. The agreement outlines protections against artificial intelligence, new structures for residuals, and more. I think their previous residual structure was created in the 80s. And of course, it's not really attuned to streaming and how pretty much on a streaming service it gets played on demand. There's no real idea of reruns and things like that. So they're trying to get this agreement in line so they can actually get paid for being a presence on those streaming networks. And we have Kelsey Davis in the chat for the first time. Thanks for joining us, Kelsey. Hello to you as well.
Indeed.
So I'll continue reading for just a bit and we can riff on it, but one of the most noteworthy parts of this agreement is its protections on AI. Now, performers whose digital replicas are used must be compensated with performers' pro rate daily rate or minimum rate, whichever is higher, and must be compensated for the number of days that a project producer determines the performer would have been needed to work if the scenes were not filmed in person. Additionally, the contract notes that the producer must take a good faith effort to estimate the number of days. So it's basically saying that if you're going to use me, you can't just use me in perpetuity without giving me what you would have paid me if I was actually there working on your set. Does that make any sense to you, Kyle?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the way I look at it is I created a avatar of you and I create a avatar of Lee Shackelford, and I create those avatars. I give them words to say. I don't need you guys anymore. I can make Discussing Who left, right, and center. But now I have to give you credit on every time you or he virtually or avatarably appear. Is that it in a nutshell?
Yeah, and I get it, because it's like before we did it just because we could. In some situations where we had to, we kind of made it work. I was just watching the season 3 of Sopranos, and spoilers for Sopranos if you never watched it, but the mother dies, the actor who plays the mother dies in real life. There's a scene, a very bad CG scene of her in season 3, which they did, you know, she had no saying that. I guess her estate probably okayed it, but she appeared on the show and she really had no say. And who knows if she received any money? I hope she would have, but it's that kind of thing going forward. Like, are we going to compensate these people properly and pay them as if they were there? And also, you got to think about what kind of rights you have once someone has died and we're using their likeness. I've seen so many Audrey Hepburn recreations and commercials and stuff. Is her estate getting paid for stuff like that? So those are kind of considerations you kind of got to think about for these actors going forward.
Wynn Grace put something interesting in the chat, which says, this seems very similar to the whole Back to the Future thing, stealing Crispin Glover's face by using the mold of his face from the first movie.
Yes. And also, I think recently, didn't they reuse the guy who played Zod's face in Justice League and he had nothing to do with it?
I believe so. And look at what we saw in The Flash. You know, there are several instances where they used Christopher Reeve. They used the character, you know, the actor who played Supergirl in the Supergirl movie. And even the Superman version of, I can't remember his name now.
Nick Cage?
Yes. You know, and all that was CG.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate all that. Because, of course, we want these actors to come back. But, again, compensate them. I think that's what needs to be done. Now, in the Star Trek world, we've done something different. We've mostly recasted and we've prequeled everything a little bit, even with the Kelvin universe recasted. So, you know, unless we're going and touching up some stuff from a previous era, we probably want to have that situation in Trek as much. But it's something interesting to ponder.
So I have an interesting question for you. So let me give you two scenarios, and I want you to tell me if this is different or the same thing. I take existing footage that already exists that I then superimpose another actor character, completely different in that scene, versus taking the likeness of a character from the past that's no longer around, the actor is no longer around, and superimposing him or her in a brand new scene. Same or different?
Oh, that's hard. That's hard. I think if any part of the other actor is still there, I think the performance is still part of what they should get paid in. But yeah, that's tricky. That's something we're going to look to going forward to see if, you know, how it all shakes out. Because I think we're just at the beginning of all this. Kelsey makes a comment saying that, what about the DS9 Trials and Tribulations episode? Yes. Interesting. They went in and digitally put themselves in a previous performance. You know, how are those actors that were in that previous performance in TOS, how were they compensated for that? Or were they compensated at all? And we know the TOS actors kind of got shafted with the whole residuals things in the first place. So they probably didn't get anything. That's my guess. But who knows? And finishing up this SAG-AFTRA thing before we move on a little bit, background actors will also receive greater compensation. Time spent creating a digital replica is now classified as work and will be paid accordingly. Now, when a background actor is called in only for replication, they will be paid for a full day. If the replica is used as principal character, the actor gets paid principal rates for the estimated days that they would have worked. So, you know, it seems like most of what they got was AI geared. I know the other part of that was getting higher residuals for streaming television shows. So I think this is a start. It looks like it's going to be back up again in 2026. So we'll see how it goes.
You know, I think that's actually smart doing it under a smaller purview or a smaller duration of time. Because look at how quick, you know, ChatGPT and the whole AI that we've got now. This time last year, that was practically not even heard of. And then it just exploded over the last 12 months. So I think even though that is a short amount of time, I think it's appropriate considering how much digital landscape changes right now.
It is definitely moving at a breakneck speed. Kyle, so we want to go ahead and talk a little bit about the upcoming Trek stuff that might be coming up next year. We talked about the actor strike and how that may have pushed some things out. I thought we probably would have got Discovery this year, you know, if you would ask me a couple of years ago, but it got pushed out to 2024. So what else do we have on the docket for 2024 and upcoming in Star Trek? Have you been able to search the interwebs to find anything?
Yes. So here's what I've got. And I'm going to make a prediction. This says early 2024 for Discovery Season 5. I'm actually going to bet mid-January to early February is going to be my bet for Discovery, because I'm thinking, you know, February sweeps, even though this is a streaming platform. I'm thinking the old school February, May sweeps.
Yeah.
So that being said, I'm going to bet end of January, 1st of February, Discovery Season 5. We will be getting Prodigy Season 2, sometime 2024 on Netflix.
Yes.
Now, these are the ones that are supposedly confirmed, but not yet known when we will get them. Lower Decks Season 5, Strange New Worlds Season 3. Two that are highly speculated, if not quote-unquote in production. The Section 31 live-action movie, the Starfleet Academy TV series, and one that was not in the list, but I keep hearing over and over and over again, is Star Trek Legacy, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, the Picard spinoff, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Legacy, they're currently, I don't know who posted this. I may have saw it in Tasha's Discord, but they were talking about doing a collective watch an episode of Star Trek Picard on a certain day to try to boost up the numbers so we can eventually kind of push for a Legacy show. All of that sounds interesting. I know a lot of stuff that's kind of been in the hopper for a long time, but they couldn't make a move on it really because of the strike. So I feel like anything that's not done right now, other than our animation stuff, is kind of going to be a ways out. I'm not even looking for it. Discovery, I don't know if they have any reshoots that they have to do. Did they get all that done before the strike? Who knows? But I'm anxious for Discovery. I hope they really stick the landing. And yeah, and hopefully we'll get more Lower Decks. You mentioned Prodigy, so we, you know, have that to look forward to next year. And also, I know that Netflix said they're going to be dropping season one of Prodigy on Netflix on Christmas.
Interesting.
So yeah, hopefully they have that in the pipeline and it's coming soon. So I can't wait for that. And you know, hopefully all this stuff comes to fruition at some reasonable time. We talked about the Marvel stuff getting pushed out so far and some stuff changing completely. So who knows what and when we'll see it.
So I have an opinion question for you. So we know Strange New Worlds Season 3, Lower Decks Season 5, they're happening unless something just catastrophic happens in the world of Star Trek. They're happening. But out of Section 31 movie, Starfleet Academy, and Star Trek Legacy, which one out of those three do you feel has the highest, and which one do you feel has the least likelihood of being made real?
Well, I think we're definitely getting the Section 31 movie. From what everything I've heard, Michelle Yeoh is really pushing for it. She loves Star Trek, so she really wants to come back and do this movie. And if that's the case, I think it's going to get done if she's behind it, backing it, like I've heard. So I think that one's going to be made for sure. Least likely, I have to say, the Starfleet Academy show is not one that I think will be anytime soon, if at all. You know, I mentioned last week that I'd love to see that in animated form. So, you know, maybe it's a time we push animation a little bit further to not only have adult humor shows and not only kids shows, but have like maybe a full blown Star Trek show in animation, since that's something they can churn out more quickly. So if they can do that, I'm really amped for it.
So if you did see a Star Trek adult animation, would you want it a different style than what we've seen in Lower Decks? Would you want it computer generated, or would it, or what does it matter?
It could be Lower Deck style. I'll be happy with it because Lower Decks, you have to admit, no matter how you feel about the show, I said from the start, it's a beautiful show. I mean, it's a well animated show. I want to pick up a few comments here, and Wynn Grace makes some good points here, saying that, do you think it will be a straight drop, a half break, or half or disco? I think they're definitely going to do a break. They've mostly been consistent with their breaks in the middle. Now, I can't remember what they did last season, but I know in the first two seasons, I believe they took a break between the first half and the end of the season. So probably a break on that one. And they may even do the same thing for Prodigy like they did last year. And Wind Grace is saying that I think Section 31 is the highest because they really want Michelle. I totally agree. Anytime you get an Academy Award winner back in Star Trek, they were lucky to get her the first time, if you ask me. But if she comes back for a movie, I think all eyes will be on that. So, yeah, I can't wait for that. Hello, Harry Anderson. Good to have you here. Wind Grace has another comment we'll pick up. I think they should do a few animation miniseries to fill the gap. You mean like a very short trick, Wind Grace? we just gonna forget those ever happened. A few episodes of Captain Sulu. I'm down for that. I'm down for that. I really want to know more about, you know, his era or his run as captain. That would be amazing. A few Riker on the Titan and the Lower Decks assets to make it easier. Yes, put it in the Lower Decks animation style. I think it could be great. I mean, even if they do in the animated series, animation style would be okay to me. But yeah, definitely the Lower Decks animation style is what I'm looking for. So make it happen. All right. Any other things, Kyle, before we go ahead and try to kind of just parse through our ratings before we get into our top five moments?
Sure. One more Discovery question. Do you think we are finished with that era as far as Star Trek?
No, because I think they're going to put that Academy show in that era.
Okay. I'd be happy with that.
They kind of gave us a light episode of that with that Tilly episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that was the original plan anyway. You know, have Tilly, I think Mary Wiseman may have been pregnant, but have Tilly leave, go to Starfleet Academy, the new rebuilding Starfleet Academy, run things in the future. I think that was kind of the goal, but since Picard season 3 did so well and Lower Decks is hitting on all cylinders, I really don't know, man. I really don't know.
You know, I hope in some form we keep it around simply because I feel like they've invested so much in building out that era of the Star Trek universe. I think it would be sad if we lost that.
It would, man. And to tell me I could never see Sonequa Martin-Green playing Captain Burnham, man, that would make me really sad. Give them a movie. Come on. All right, Kyle, let's look at some of the numbers. Let's see how we rated Lower Decks this season. First off, shocker here. Kyle Jones, this is your highest rated season of Lower Decks.
That's not a shocker. No, absolutely not. I'm all for the fact that I rated this probably much higher than I probably didn't rate the other episodes 2.5, highest 3, maybe.
Well, your average rating for this season is 4.6.
Okay. All right.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, your lowest season average was season 2, and that was 3.3. So that's a sizable jump.
That's very sizable. Yes.
Larry's average was 4.4 for this season, while mine was shockingly lower. Mine was 4.29. So maybe I was harder on a few episodes. My lowest season was also season 2 with 3.6. So apparently we really hated season 2. So
we did. Because correct me if I'm wrong, we did not review season 3, did we?
We reviewed the first few episodes of season 3.
And that was it.
Yeah. It broke up the band, man. Mm. What do you think was your lowest rated episode of this season?
Oh, I want to say off the top of my head, without even looking, either the Ferengi, but probably Badgy. I don't really like Badgy.
Yeah, a few more Badgies was your lowest rated episode. And for mine was the premiere episode of Tuvix. That one, to me, they crapped on Voyager too much. I couldn't take it. It hurt my heart. So that was my lowest. Of course, I mean, this is probably no surprise. Your highest of the season was the finale, Old Friends, New Planets. And the last two episodes of the season, Inner Fight and Old Friends, New Planets, were both my highest rated episodes of the season. So overall, just, you know, holistic picture here, we really love this season, I think, all in all. And even when I look at our ratings versus what other people have, ours are higher. Strangely enough, ours are on average higher, especially looking at the IMDb ratings, which kind of surprised me because usually Lower Decks were a lot lower, but we were higher almost every episode this season. So I think we're on board, man. I think we've boarded the Cerritos.
So now I'm curious as to season 3. Seriously. I don't know. I'm not saying let's go back and you know, view them, but at least it's made me curious. This has made me curious to see something I didn't want to see before. So,
and I think it's doing its job if that's the case. Yeah. I watched all of them now. I watched all of them. I'm not going to say I loved all of them. Let me pick up Wayne Grace's comment real quick, saying that I think they really want to continue in that time, meaning the future Burnham era. That's their creation, and it's a place where they can stake their claim.
Good point.
It also gives them, I think, a bigger sandbox to play in. They can do more things. Now, some of those things I feel like trap them a little bit, because it's cool having the future technology, but the future technology also makes writing probably a little bit harder. I mean, I have to imagine it's already hard to write in the Star Trek world at times when there's technology that can do everything. And in the future, it's like they really got technology that can do everything. So it's definitely their sandbox. I would love to see them continue in that era. But I think now everybody is clamoring for this period that's close to the 90s era Trek. Everybody really wants that. It's just like with Star Wars in the sequel trilogy. I love it, but everybody seemingly wants everything closer to the OT or the prequel era right now. So who knows? And Wynn Grace here saying, the real question is, will they explain Calypso? We can only hope. We can only hope. That's going to be the season finale, man. The series finale. Leaves Discovery in some nebula.
And the explanation of, and it just goes blind.
No. Screaming our TV. Cal, we've talked about ratings. We've talked the little news. We talked about the upcoming outlook. Let's finish things off here by talking about our top five moments or most liked moments of the season. Number five for me was going to Ferenginar. I love that casino-esque look we kind of got into the Ferengi society. Maybe this isn't the whole society, but it kind of feels like it is. But this could just be like a corner. This could be their Las Vegas. Every part of Ferenginar may not be like that, but kind of tying it into the few times we saw Ferenginar in various different series, DS9 and whatnot. I think it really gave me a different view, and I love just seeing more of their culture, how capitalistic they are. And it's their Vegas, and the writers and the creators really played it up and drummed it up. And even with the whole TV thing, I thought it was a really good portrayal. And even some of the cringe stuff with the monuments, yes. Lost Prophets. You know, I just feel like they did a great job, and I would definitely want to go back to Ferenginar. I can't believe I'm saying that. So yeah, I love that particular part of the season. What's your number five, sir?
So my number five is not a moment. It's more of an observation, and it is going to be seemingly adjusting the course behind the scenes, whatever that adjustment, if there really was, because it felt like there was, whatever that was, it made me like season four. So that is my number five.
If you had to put your finger on what that course adjustment was, what would you think it was? Is it just better writing, or just an overall better outlook of where they were going with the season? Or was it, as you know, Mike McMahon said, this was the course all along?
And maybe, and truly it was, because remember I said last week that maybe we needed to see Mariner not learning a lesson over and over and over, so that when she finally did learn a lesson, or we've understood why she was who she was, we really understood why she was who she was. So maybe he's 100% honest in saying, hey, folks, this is just the way it was.
And I agree. And the only thing for me, I feel like it waffled back and forth just a little bit too much for me, because I thought we were getting growth. Then we were back to old Mariner. And then what you didn't get by now watching season three is that's when they really put Ransom on her tail. And she was kind of under Ransom's arm. And they had a few good adventures together. But again, it felt like a lot of waffling back and forth. But kudos to the writers for being able to lock that in.
So, you know, I haven't had my proverbial bad pun lately. So here we go. So basically in season three, as far as her character development, they were holding her ransom.
Oh, God. Cha-ching. We're ending the show now.
So that's my number five.
Kelsey Davis says, and they made new canon. I think she's talking about Ferenginar. Yes, it was awesome canon that they made. I want more of that. It's so great.
My number four was the introduction of Talyn. I think she was an awesome addition to the story. She helped, you know, make it make a little more serious on some degree. So, yes, she's my number four, Talyn.
I think if there's one thing everybody can agree on from this season is that Talyn was a joy. She was a joy. Hopefully we have that actor come back to be like a main cast member next season. But just a little bit of having that grounded character in there and with the Vulcan disposition, I really loved how that played in with the zaniness and the craziness of the rest of the characters. It just really worked. And it seems like something they would have thought of from the beginning to throw in there to balance things out. But man, she just fit right in and agreed with you 100%. Loved having her around.
You know, and I think making that character not superior to them in rank, but having of similar rank made her work even better. Because I don't think we would have said the same thing if she would have been someone who was commanding them, go do this, go do that. She would have just came across as, oh, there's the Vulcan.
Yeah, yeah. She would have came out more of an a-hole if she would have been like there above them. So totally agreed. My number four is Tindi's backstory.
Hmm.
We get more of Tindi's backstory in this season, and I love every minute of it. I love how even, you know, we got some of her backstory in previous seasons, but we didn't really get a lot of information on it. But it played directly into the Stranger Worlds episode, the crossover episode. Her backstory played directly into that. But yeah, I just think Tindi, knowing that she's so badass, knowing that she really could go to Orion and kind of be in charge. She really gave up her position to her sister. Just knowing all of that and know she was humble enough to just say, I'm going to come and I want to be in Starfleet. I love the science. I love Rutherford. Forget all that, you know, power and stuff I have back there with my family on Orion. I just want to be a part of Starfleet. So I thought the way they explained her story and, you know, going to Orion and seeing it, I think was great. The way they, again, like Fringinar, seeing Orion bringing all that into Lower Decks, to me, this is where they excel, and I really love that.
Very good.
I will go ahead and go into my number three, which is the promotion for the Lower Deckers. Talking about the growth of these characters, seeing where they were in the first season, there are some of them I thought might get promoted, and some of them I thought would never get promoted. Of course, I thought Boimler's drive would eventually got him to a promotion. I never would have thought Mariner would have got promoted. But pretty much, I was all the rest of them should have got promoted. I will say that. But seeing them all grow and what that allowed for them to do this season was to go in different directions, go on their own adventures, go do their own thing, have their own experiences. And the way they brought that back in that caves episode to where we got to actually see them go on their own adventures, have their own experiences, and how that came together to allow them to get out of that current situation they were in. Great writing, which I guess I can say on the whole, the writing was just fantastic this season. And that was another case of it. I think they did a great job of showing us the journey of these characters. You know, it seemed like for three seasons, we didn't get a lot of growth, but this season, it's just like they threw it all on us. And I thought it was great.
So my number three kind of is an offshoot of your number three. I really like this goes back to writing. I like the threaded arc, you know, this mystery that we see that is inserted into each episode, but doesn't overtake each episode, and we get a payoff at the end. That's the best type of thread that I think, you know, Discovery did a season, no spoiler intended. It felt like the audience kind of got burned, for lack of a better word, with that storyline. So, because it was just so much, and then it was like, just kind of fell apart to me.
Yeah.
But this one didn't. It was just inserted, and then it built and built, and then it had a payoff. So my threaded arc, that's my number three.
You know, they did it in a way where they didn't give us enough to make us start speculating too wildly. We kind of knew what the mystery was, but there's really no true breadcrumbs to go and start researching and start coming up with our own hypotheses, although we had some, but you know, they were just based off of what we think purely and not off of anything that led us to it in the show. So refreshing, like you said, to have this overarching thing, but not having consumed the season. We still had our individual episodes, but we had this thing in the background. You could gleam onto it if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. If not, you can just enjoy the episodes. And again, in Discovery, the mystery or the mystery box is all consuming. Everything we do that season is try to figure out what's going on with this mystery box thing. So again, Kyle, I totally agree with you. It was refreshing. We should pick up a few comments here. Win Grace is saying, I would never expect the show to make any lasting changes in season one. For me, I always figured like what we got in season one was kind of was going to be the tone of the show forever. But to me, this season, it changed in a good way. The Easter eggs, for example, let's talk about the Easter eggs. To me, the Easter eggs in the first three seasons were throwaway, thrown in just for the one-off laugh or just the piece of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. But to me, the Easter eggs for this season, they were integral parts of the story. Therefore, I don't consider them Easter eggs. I consider them just to be part of the story.
Right.
And that's going to go into my number two, which is Nick Locarno's return. That could have been a throwaway Easter egg that they threw out in an episode and we never heard of again. Just for laughs or just to have us say, oh, that's cool. But they wove it into the story. It's a core element. It's not frivolous. So in that sense, whenever they go back into Trek's past and, you know, that flashback episode we got of Starfleet Academy from the first duty episode. I mean, they didn't have to do that. So anytime they make a reference, if they make it that integral to the story, I think I'm down for it.
And seeing that bright-eyed version of Mariner that was so different from the Mariner that we've seen. You know, I love how this is going because you and I are feeding off of each other back and forth, because my number two is character development for Mariner. Maybe not development, but the understanding of her character, because assuming that it's not character development, that she was the way she was because of the things that happened in the past, but understanding as an audience the character, I think that was smart writing. It was smart for the character. It was smart for the show. So that's my number two.
To see somebody act out and then know why they've been acting out. Yeah. And I think a lot of it, like, I don't even know if her mother knew what was going on with her. Maybe she did. Maybe that's why she gave her so much leeway. But yeah, just to get that backstory. And actually, that's my number one, which is Beckett's journey. Again, talk about season one, how different she was. And even coming into this season, how different she was. But we got to see them grow up over the course of the season. And her story is something I never would imagine that she would have had such a deep connection to Nova Squad, Nick Locarno, Cito. I never thought she would have been that ingrained in the Trek we already knew. So good on them. Good on them. Again, we go back to excellent writing. Kelsey saying that they can stay lieutenants for a while. I agree. Let's stay lieutenants for a while and continue to see that growth in them. So, Kyle, if you will give us your number one.
So tell me again, really quick, what your number one was.
Mine was Beckett Mariner's journey.
Journey.
So it's kind of your number two is kind of the same thing.
Same thing. So what you're basically saying is their journey really fleshed out the characters, correct?
Yes.
So speaking of fleshing out the characters, while this is not per se Lower Decks, it's Lower Decks connected. My number one was the crossover, you know, the pun intended, of fleshing out the character with Strange New Worlds, because that is the moment that made me see those two characters in a different light and enter season four with a new perspective than I think I would have had. I would have still been negative Kyle going into season four had I not seen that. So that's my number one moment, is this crossover with Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, talk about cross promotion. I think that may have been the best thing they could have done for this show. And even for Strange New Worlds, because you had people that were diehard Lower Deckers that may not have been into Strange New Worlds. So what do you think about further cross promotion in Star Trek?
Oh, I love, and let me say it one more time, love anytime two franchise shows share characters, share people, whatever the case may be. I love that in a show. So anytime they want to do that, I'm all for it, all about it.
Now, it would be cool. It probably won't happen now, but it would be cool to get a Lower Decker to pop up in Prodigy. Of course, they'll be older, but it would be cool if that could happen. Probably won't at this point, but I heard this, the next season of Prodigy, they get pretty crazy and they make some reaches. We'll see what they're actually able to do. Yeah, guys, we're kind of going to wrap this up. I think we've had a very good season of Lower Decks, and I don't know we're going to get the next one, but I'm excited about it, actually, so, which is just a 180 for me.
And me.
Kyle, you have anything else before we kind of wrap this up and get out of here, man?
Other than what you just said, I'll say it again. This was an amazing season, and I can't believe I'm saying that about Lower Decks, but I'm glad I'm saying it about Lower Decks.
If you have feedback, you can send that in to feedback@discussingtrek.com or hit us up at Discussing Trek on any and all social medias. Thank you to Win Grace and Kelsey and everybody else, Carrie, everybody else that was in the chat. We really appreciate it. Also going to say, check out Win Grace's videos. They're always great. And we don't have Tasha tonight. Tasha's been a little under the weather. So if you're a patron of any of her channels, make sure you send her a message and tell her to get well soon. But other than that, guys, we're out of here. Thank you all for coming. It's been a lot of fun. So until next time, live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that, like, shut up, Wesley? I can just go, shut up, Clarence?